103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I love my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God. Letting go of God.
Welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is April 24th. Wednesday, 7 nice. P.M. And if it's not, then you're listening to a rebroadcast of the show and should not try to call in. I'm Dotter Five, and as usual, we have the Wombat on the phone. So with us, say hello, Wombat.
Hello, Wombat! I'm on the phone, I'm on the radio, and I got friends with Yay. You. Let's go! Awesome week. Let's have a fun time.
Cool. Very good. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for 9 years now?
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that, Wombat?
I can't wait to see how it finally ends. I think the first episode was good. Huh? I got my friends over. Who episode? Knows what's going to happen to the dragons? I want to know what's going to happen to all the
dragons.
We don't
have dragons.
Who's going to sit on the Iron Throne? I can't wait.
No,
it's going to be amazing.
No, you're looking at a different series. This is just an atheist call-in TV show. People sitting there answering questions from the audience that calls in. And it's, like I say, it's been on for 9 years now. It's on every Wednesday night at 6:30. Matter of fact, that's going on right now on Comcast Channel 12. We hope, however, that you'll stay with our show and TiVo their show and watch it later. Anyway. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them on this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. So today's topic is, why should we not call religion a mental illness?
Oh,
I know that a lot of us have heard that out there, secular people, atheist free thinkers, calling people who are religious mentally ill.
Mm.
But let's talk about that and see if it's a valid concept or not. We have a guest. Would you like to introduce your guest there, Wombat?
Sure. I got one of my best friends, especially in SC realm ever, Linda Mocco, who is also known as Super Curious. I can't believe
Hello.
You're on the show.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for welcoming me.
Sure. Welcome to the show.
Best accent in epistemology, probably. Next,
yeah.
Ben. So Ben and Linda and I there's three musketeers as far as street epistemology is concerned for me, and it's me, Linda, and another friend of ours who's stationed in Africa, Ben Diesel. And we've been helping each other out, try to get each other better, try to share our experiences. And Linda's been a long-term friend of the show, or of me, and just my efforts in SC. And I've been supporting her for a long time, too. So really happy to have you on the show.
Yeah. Welcome. Just as a real quick for people who may have picked this particular episode out of a list of episodes, would you say real quickly what SC, or street epistemology, is?
Go for it, Linda.
For me? Oh, street epistemology is a dialectic aimed to have good conversations about deeply held beliefs, and where we examined examine what somebody believes, the reasons they came to that belief, and how reliable their method is for concluding whether the belief is true or not. Could be so one way going through.
So it's a shouting match? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's a very friendly way of just gently, exploring together what the basis are for the beliefs at hand and working together to see whether we have the good, reliable methods there in play.
This is probably a good
So how does this lay out? You walk up to people in the street and you have a microphone or what?
Some people do it like that. I've done that once here in Finland, in Helsinki. I also offered people coffee. So it was a table, a couple of chairs, and a big thermos of very dark roast coffee.
Yeah, Linda makes it sound. Linda makes it sound really basic. She had like the tablecloth. She had like a Keurig machine. She had mugs matching like crockery. It was amazing. It was really a fantastic setup.
If she were in London, she'd offer tea, I bet.
Yeah, I'll probably get a chance to do that sometime too.
Very cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then we sit down. It's really friendly. A 5-minute chat is what I wrote on the my little sign, and. Yeah, people have a lot of beliefs, and they generally, what I found was they really enjoyed talking about them and exploring them and thinking about it. And so some of the great responses is like, wow, I haven't thought of it like that before. What I do as a street epistemologist is also repeat back to whoever it is I'm having a conversation with what it is that they believe, and that seems to also help them to think about it a bit more. So it's really gentle and nice, and just good questions, really. Mm-hmm. And I always learn something new in that situation as well.
Could you tell me about...
What cities have you done it in so far?
In Helsinki only. And then I've done it with an apologist from North Carolina on my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Cool. So I've also done it that way,
Kitchen
online.
Epistemology. You also did Periscope. You've done workshops in Oxford or some places like that? Am I right?
In Oxford?
No. When did you went to the big atheist convention? Did you go to...
Yes, in Manchester.
There you go.
But there I did it without really periscoping or anything. Just it's like everyday street epistemology.
Oh, wow.
I think once you begin learning about street epistemology, and I would say first and foremost, I'm a student of the dialectic, it's... then turns into a habit of a way of speaking with people, having open questions, staying quite neutral to really examine the belief at hand. And I try not to kind of put my beliefs into the mix too much. I like staying neutral and just facilitating the calm way of conversing and peeling back layers on why we believe what we believe, because usually I found it quite a lot that people also tend to identify with their beliefs quite a bit. So what I'm trying to avoid is the whole, you know, shouting match or the need to defend the belief.
Sure.
You know, it's more like opening it up and examining it, having fun.
What's really interesting is that Linda is doing these SC conversations not in a Western America style country, or like not from in the position of doing SC in America is that you're largely dealing with like the Christian right or Christian indoctrinated people. But in Finland, it's much more secular, and SC seen more of like a we should be talking about why we don't believe in a God. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's true, and also I think 3 out of the 4 people I had a conversation with here in Helsinki when I did the filming of the conversations, it came down to tradition. So, and they fully understood that, and then it was the question like, should we really, is that reliable for us to believe that something is true? And then it was like, well, they would rather just have the traditions, and it's not about whether it's true or not,
right.
Which in itself is enlightening, and it's good to have that conversation and just put it.
So you're talking about Christian beliefs then that are the tradition that people
believe
in? Yeah,
the state church. We still have a state church in Finland is Lutheran Christian.
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting.
But people say they go to, like they want to get married in the church and they want to have the traditions.
Right.
But
yeah.
When it comes to creation versus evolution and such, it's definitely evolution and you know, we're still working on the problem of how everything came to be, kind of.
And it's more of like, what's the big deal? Religion's not that big of a deal. Let's not talk about it. Let's not consider about why, like, I feel like it goes both ways. Like, there's the idea of there's someone that believes something that's not true, and you try to talk to them so you can help them understand if their beliefs are true or not, and have them come to the assessment that their belief isn't true on their own. But then there's also the idea of someone who may have a very reliable position, but was born into it just through tradition, or never being in an environment that was exposed to supernatural beliefs or, like, unfounded, you know, claims or assertions. And so you have these people in, like, Finland who are like, I think I already have the most reasonable position. I'm not going to practice critical thinking about why that position is reliable, which I feel makes them vulnerable to being indoctrinated to, like, really bad ideas. So I really respect what Linda's doing, doing SE in environments where people are like, I don't see the big deal about it. It's like, it is a big deal.
And also, actually do have a growing Bible Belt, like an area in Finland where there's more people, and it's kind of creationism is kind of coming over into Finland, if I've understood things correctly.
Coming.
I've read stuff online, and we have some politicians sometimes talking in kind of the whole, like, young earth creationist. I think we have one politician who spoke out about that, and we haven't heard that. I haven't heard that in Finnish politics before, so I think we do need to be, you know.
Well, that makes your work so much more important than if they're starting to get inroads like that.
I'll throw that.
Have you attended any of the churches there? Are they still preaching fire and brimstone in those churches?
Oh, it's been a while since I've been to a church, I must admit. I think the Lutheran take is, like, kind of, it's more like it's not that bad.
Really?
The hell thing kind of dropped off because it was reformed by somebody at some point, and somebody called Luther, and so I think they got it, made it really much more nicer as a religion. I must say, I don't know.
Yeah, well, Luther himself, I don't know much about Luther. I know, well, we are talking about Martin Luther, right?
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Yeah,
he was a rabid anti-Semite and a real fire and brimstone type of person.
Oh. Just so the colors know, he's not talking about the black guy. He's talking about the guy who made the Lutheran church.
Yeah, not Martin Luther King, Martin Luther. And he wrote a book. You can go on Amazon right now and find the book called The Jews and Their Lies. I mean, he was not a shining example of what Christianity could be.
Wow.
I'll put it that way. Now, he's the one who reformed Christianity, but he's not a person who's reformed Lutheranism.
All right. We'll see. So I don't know at all. I'm not in.
Well, somebody did, apparently, because if you say it's not that bad there, then that's good.
So, Linda, I've only ever done SE in one language before. I've had rare opportunities to try it out in sign language, but the people didn't want to be recorded, so I was just like, oh, I'm sad now. But you know multiple languages, and this is kind of really interesting. Could you talk about some of the conflicts or challenges that come about with the languages that you do know, and maybe list them out?
I think the biggest challenges would be just for me as a practitioner to get the wording right and to get the right translation. I notice that I kind of fumble and do like a literal translation from English to Finnish or Swedish, which is my other native language. But then there are also interesting things that in Finnish, the word for belief... belief and faith, they're the same thing, like a
same word, same connotation.
It kind of muddles everything.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also kind of opens up things where it becomes quite clear that people really don't think about it that much, that the method actually is the same word for the holding of a belief. And
like later,
it becomes...
Oh, sorry.
No, I don't really know where I was going with that.
But Larry, I was saying, like, the word choice and wordsmithing, like, when it comes to asking a good question to keep the person that you're talking to focused and not defensive is so important. And just like tone, but like just the words you choose, like the mind fields of trigger words that are out there are so numerous that doing this in multiple languages is its own challenge because the cultural expectation for each little phrase that you're saying to like help a person stay open-minded is boggling. It's really mind-boggling. What Linda does is really cool.
What she said earlier on, and I know you do it as well, is repeating back to them what they say to you, so that it can help them correct it if it's not correct.
Right.
It's not what they meant. That's a big thing. I need to do that more often. But I think it's a great idea.
Cool.
Yeah, it makes it more fair, I think, that you're actually arguing about, or not arguing, but having a conversation about what the
one word that
and not romani.
Yeah, you dropped off there just for a second. But one thing I'd like to say is when people come to me with faith, a lot of times they'll use it in a religious context, but sometimes they won't. Hmm. And I like to say I'd rather use the word hope. Because some people say, I hope I will have faith that I will end up in a better place. Don't you mean hope that you'll hope you'll have it? He said, yeah, that's what happened to me the last time I had a
Hey, that's a really nice way of putting that. I might borrow that. That's really good. I like that.
Yeah. I like faith can bring religion right straight into, but hope can be used anywhere across religions or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So last night, I actually had a really fun opportunity. I went to a birthday party of a coworker of mine, good friend of mine, and it was a potluck dinner, right? So everyone's bringing their food, and we fill up an entire I drive all the way up there, and there's like just a table full of food from all these different people who I work with, scientists, engineers, all this stuff, plus other people we don't know who ended up being church friends of the coworker's birthday. The guy who was having his birthday. So, like, it was people I didn't meet before, their family, some friends of mine that I already knew from work. It was a nice little gathering. But we all chipped in and brought, like, a nice bit of food that ended up being this giant platter. And we had stuff from all around the world, from our Indian friends, stuff from, like, Venezuela friends, Chinese friends, me, everything. It was great. Before we began the festivities and, like, started eating, I guess the pastor friend of the guy who was having his birthday party got up in front of everybody, between everybody and the food, stands and looks at everybody and says, okay, we're going to start festivities. Let's say grace, and everyone bow their heads. And like and by the way, we don't know who this guy is, and I'm already on my way towards like the pulled pork. He just stands in front of everyone's like, all right, guys, I'm going to need everyone to bow their heads and get ready for prayer. And I'm like, I'm not bowing my head. I'm not going to make a big deal about it, but I'm going to happily just keep my eyes open and wait for him to do his thing. Because, you know, if I'm in India, I'm going to show some respect and do whatever the Indian tradition is there. But like right now, he's kind of being rude. He's being in front of us and getting away with our food.
And they get away with it.
Yo, let me tell you the prayer that he said. He said, God, thank you for the food that you brought to us. I want to ask you to bless it and just continue blessing us for the rest of your life. So like, not only is he taking... Is he letting his God take credit for the crackers and cheese and meat that I brought and the chips that I brought? But he's also saying, like, oh, excuse me, guys, give me a chance to let me talk to the creator of the universe so that he can bless the food that you guys brought.
Well, let me push my religion off on you, too.
It was
practice my religion, whether you believe it or not.
Right. And there was another point where I'm keeping my eyes open and I'm looking at the rest of the crowd, seeing who else has their eyes open. I would recommend atheists try this out. If you're ever in a situation like this, because you get to see who's in on the knowledge and who's out.
Right.
And I got some looks back from other people. Like everyone from India was looking at me like, okay, we know the rules here. I had some Venezuelan friends who were doing the same thing too, but it didn't necessarily mean that they were like atheists. It just means like, what is this guy doing right now? It was done and we moved on. But I thought it was an interesting aspect because I was a little embarrassed as American.
It's a bullying tactic to get up there and do that and expect people will not take you up on your challenge for their time and attention. It's typical of religion. And did I ever tell you the last time I went to church?
No.
There was a pastor shook my hand and would not let it go.
Would not let it go?
No. He wanted to stand there and talk to me. And I was ready to move on. I didn't want to talk to him. So I know karate. I'm a black belt karate. I didn't hit him.
I don't
anything.
Know this. I never. Knew
I didn't
this about
hit
you.
Him.
I didn't know
I
this.
Did not
you.
Hit him.
What? Okay.
What I did was I used a maneuver where I looked, you know, how you shake hands. I stepped back and pulled my hand straight up, and back, and that will break a handhold like that.
Huh.
But he was so tenacious and such a bully that he had my hand in such a grip that his thumb dug a channel in my hand.
Why?
As I pulled it back. Because he wouldn't let go.
But why wouldn't
he
let go?
And he was fighting me the
entire time. Why? What was going on?
He wanted to control me. He wanted to bully me. He wanted to hold me there and tell me things.
Okay.
To find out things about me.
Linda, have you ever had a weird thing like that happen to you?
No, I don't hold the people I have conversations with. If they want to go, they're free to. No,
he meant like, have you ever run into a preacher like that before?
Yeah, no, I haven't. What I've had is, how do you guys feel about church bells?
I don't know what those, the ding dongs?
I live, I live 50 yards about, or maybe 100 yards. I'm not really good on my yards. But about 70 meters from a church tower, and they play their church bells every Saturday morning, Sunday morning sometimes. And for a long while, it's like 20, 30 minutes, and it's really loud. It almost sounds like it's inside the house.
Wow.
And I've always thought that that's kind of intrusive, that which other establishment has the right to have that type of loud-sounding decibels that go on for the period of time that it does.
Good
and
point.
We just say it's fine.
And suing them to stop it would put you in a bad position in your neighborhood if other people enjoy it or feel like they have the right to play them no matter who it disturbs. Mm-hmm. But have you ever thought about taking them to task over that?
I don't know if you can sue
I did call them
Finland.
Once.
No, I mean through the legal system.
Mm. No, I called them once and asked as a neighbor, would you mind taking it down a notch?
And what did they say?
She said, no, this is a blessing. Or it's a different, I'm using the wrong word, but she was like, they're having a service and they need to play the bells. And I said, well, I'm just kindly asking you to just take it down a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I just did that for myself. No, it didn't matter. Mm. They keep on playing them.
That's bullying.
Mm.
Yeah, I think so.
Bullying.
Because they're very loud.
But, you know, what's embarrassing for me is when, you know, people from other countries look at me when we have that eye contact, when someone else is bullying using their religion, it's almost of like, they're like, check out this guy. He's crazy. Right. And in my head, like, I am aware of the sentiment of like, this guy's being a jerk or this guy, you know, he's clearly, you know, delusional and forcing that down us. But I wouldn't necessarily say like he's crazy or suffering from a mental illness, which is what I wanted to talk about today. I feel like we have a tendency, especially as atheists, to conflate mental illness with having a religion. And I think it's problematic in a couple of senses. One, it sort of belittles mental illnesses because I hold religion on a really low standard already. But I hold people with mental illnesses on a much, much higher standard, much, much higher standard. And I feel like the idea of, hey, I was religious, right? I believed in a God, and I had only needed to educate myself and be more open to reason to get myself out of it. There are people with mental illnesses who don't have that as an option. So, like, why are we calling religion a mental illness when it's playing by different rules? What do you think?
You can say Richard Dawkins started it off with his book, The God Delusion. Being deluded is a mental illness, and no matter the source of the delusion, if you're deluded into thinking that crackers change into the body of Christ every Sunday just because some priests mumble some magic words over them, then you have a delusion, and that's not a healthy state of mental activity. But to go on from there, you know, there are much more serious mental illnesses than that, and to group them all together is maybe a little much. Maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah.
But I can understand his point.
Oh, I definitely understand the idea of being deluded and not having, like, a healthy mind frame from that. But when I say mental illness, I'm clearly referring to, like, more of, like, states of distress, not necessarily, like, self-imposed delusions, but, like, you are schizophrenic or you have depression or you need like a certain sort of help that can't just be given to you by giving you a pep talk.
Well, you said self-imposed. They're not self-imposed. They're societal imposed. They're externally imposed from the earliest childhood.
I agree, but they can also be self-imposed too. So like both of those combined, like I can choose to be religious.
Yeah.
I can, you know, try to get married and eventually fall into it. There's things I can do in my environment that makes me believe, be convinced of certain things as well. But what I'm also saying is that it seems that we're calling like mental, like seems like we have a different tier of things that we're referring to as a mental illness that are very unlike just the self-delusions or societal delusions that we could be born into. And it requires a little bit more empathy than just putting them all in the same box and chucking them aside. Linda, what do you think?
Well, I'm thinking about that kind of the, and I don't know if Sam Harris is talking about mental illness, but kind of like I would blame the faulty ideas and not the person believing them. Like, I don't think the people of the planet when we believed that the Earth was, oh no, I'm going there flat, but I'm talking about ages ago. I don't think the majority of people were mentally ill. It was just we didn't have the right information. Like, being incorrect is not a mental illness, and believing false things I don't think is a mental illness. And so these dogmas and things that we repeat and these false ideas, I think we can put at fault and not the people who believe in them, because I think it's a different kind of cultural, understandable, you know, process that leads people to believe things that might be false.
Hmm.
Is what I think.
Okay.
No, I agree. I think that particularly about the flat earth people, when you walk outside and you look around, or if you get out on an ocean and you look around, it does seem flat. It's just a perspective thing.
Yeah.
If you take a ruler or a yardstick or anything longer and lay it on the ground, it's going to be flat.
It's going to be flat.
they are using the evidence that is presented to their senses,
right,
to determine what they believe is true or not. Then when they get up to the point of science where we could have demonstrations of why the Earth is not flat, like when ships sink below the horizon when they sail away,
sure,
or that sticks have definite shadows at lowered latitudes than they do at higher, when the sun would be directly overhead, like London, the stick would cast a shadow when at the equator, that type of thing. It shows that there is a roundness to the Earth. Mm. They fight that because it's contrary to their senses.
Right.
But I don't fault them for that. I think they're willfully ignorant where it comes to science. But what can you say? Now, when somebody says that magic is real and that saying a few words over wafers turns it into a human body, or a God's body or whatever, or that, I don't know, talking to yourself is telepathic communication with the deity, then how is that mentally well?
Can I throw something out real quick?
I know people have tell you from the earliest childhood that it is, but...
Well, Larry,
I got a
quick thing to say to that before we go on break. We got like
sure.
2 minutes, but like in the
okay.
same way that a flat earther is surrounded by evidence that's apparent to him that the earth is flat, a religious uh-huh. person who grew up in a religious family is surrounded by people who love him and surrounded by mm-hmm. authority figures who all believe a particular narrative. And it's only makes sense to them to believe what people who love him or her believe as well. Because the model is, these people care about me, they love me, and they all believe this thing. So it makes sense for me to believe it too, because these guys have my best interests at heart when it all comes down to it. It's that societal pressure sort of like feedback that's making them feel just as justified in their belief as a flat earther mm-hmm. does when he puts a ruler down on the flat ground and says, oh, it looks flat to me.
Yeah, there's always that.
Ooh. Yo, we got a break coming up. We're going to go more into these details later, but I want to tell you, we got some good music coming up. We have music from one of my friends coming from the Sunday Assembly. We're going to be playing Equal Signs and then a bunch of other songs, including the Atheist Anthem. Don't go anywhere. This is Wozo Radio, I think 103.9. Let's have a fun time. Music time. Let's go.
Jenny works like Johnny on the factory floor, but when payday comes around, Johnny's check is more. When man equals woman and straight equals gay, black equals white and non-believer equals saint, we will sing together, all humankind. told her daddy.
Lily told her daddy.
I'm in love with Patrice.
I'm in love with Patrice.
He said you're not my daughter and put her on the streets. When
man equals woman
and straight equals gay,
black equals white and non-believer equals saint, we will sing together, all humankind. Nothing between us but an equal sign. Nothing between us but an equal sign.
Now Eddie is a good man.
Eddie is a good man.
Oh, but time and time again.
But time and time again. The police pull him over for the color of his skin.
When man equals woman and straight equals gay,
black equals white and non-believer equals saint, we will sing together, all humankind. Nothing between us but an equal sign.
We got
nothing between us but an equal sign.
Pick it up.
Bossman told Elijah.
Oh, the bossman told Elijah.
You're perfect for the job.
I think you're perfect for the job.
But you'll never work for me.
Cause you don't believe in God.
When man equals woman and straight equals gay, black equals white and non-believer equals saint,
we're gonna
sing together, all humankind. Nothing between us but an equal sign.
We got nothing.
Nothing between us but an equal sign.
We want
nothing between us but an equal sign.
We got nothing.
Nothing between us but an equal sign.
Friday, the Rock and Mona Lisa were just fighting and could not accept the reason that you could eat food without saying prayer or the grace. And you said something about how that it could have changed the taste. It was like Tuesday when Mom just kept on sneezing and you didn't say bless you and she didn't get your reasons. I said, you too, can't you try to be polite? This isn't a real reason for the Rock and Mona Lisa to fight.
The universe may look quite finely tuned, but really this is songs that you've assumed. A better explanation's cosmological inflation, so we find the theologically marooned. The complexity of life is not a godly sign. The creatures that we see exhibit bad design. It's the only resolution, it was caused by evolution, so we're ontologically doubtful of things divine.
There is no point to prayer. Your God doesn't work as magic for anyone, anywhere. There's no one listening in to confessions of your sin, and it's almost certain that there's no one there. We do not follow scriptural morality. We like to base our ethics in reality. So we really do not mind if you find you are inclined to have a go at homosexuality.
Believing things on faith will never mean they're true. You've got to think it through with reasoning and an unbiased view. There is no dispensation for your extraordinary dedication, so that's something else you got wrong too. Oh, you think you're being logical, but you're not at all. Your condescending arrogance leaves me totally appalled. So we've come to the conclusion that you're deep in a delusion, and there probably isn't a God after all.
And here's the thing I don't get, Adam said to the friendly voice in his head. Why is the sky blue?
I told you before, the voice replied, exhausted. It's the refracted light thing from the sun. It's the white light and all the other colors in it. The whole thing I said.
No, Adam interrupted, his hands still raking through the coarse hair on his chest. I meant more like, why blue? Like, blue? I mean, the ocean's already blue, guy. And when you think about it, I mean, grass is already green. That's pretty close to blue. It's just, I mean, don't you think you're overdoing it on the blue? I'm just saying, don't you think?
The voice let out a sigh. How about we take a break from the questions?
Aw, why do we have to stop?
Asked Adam. We just do, said the voice.
You're angry again, groaned Adam. Didn't you say you wanted to construct the feedback?
I remember saying that. I didn't forget, answered the voice, annoyed.
It's just...
You're bumming me out. Well, don't ask for constructive feedback if you don't want it, mister. Life isn't all about getting praised all day. The voice in Adam's head just sighed again. I'm just saying, it's an awful lot of blue. That's all. It's a very nice color, but a bit much. And, like I said yesterday, birds should have thumbs. They're so useful. I mean, look at this. I'm grabbing it, I'm dropping it. I'm grabbing it, I'm dropping it again. Think about how much more chipper birds would be if they didn't have to build houses with their face. I mean, think about that. Also, I got these two brown, nipply spots in my chest. I have no idea what these are for. Do you know you put them here?
Listen, Adam, said the voice.
From now on, you can keep asking your questions, but I won't be directly answering you anymore.
Huh?
Adam said, alarmed, his eyes still fixed on the blue sky above. Why? He asked. You know, it's up to you to find answers for yourself, man. I mean, honestly, that's what this whole thing is about, dude. Oh, Adam said, nodding slowly at first, but then with greater resolution, with purpose, meaning. Okay, then. I got it. Oh, by the way, the voice said, fading away. Make sure you don't eat any of those apples on top of that tree on that hill over there. What, those apples? Asked Adam. Why not? There was no response.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Welcome back. I'm Dotter 5, and this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM Live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is April 24th, 2019. And now let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. Founded in 2002, we're in our 17th year. ASK now has over 900 members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Just go to Google and type in Knoxville Atheist, and you can find us on Meetup, at our website, whatever, but just search for Knoxville Atheist. Just that simple. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly Meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Taproom and Pizzeria in the Old City in Knoxville, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience, for that. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you can still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one, start one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on the upcoming events tag. There's also Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a few years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, though, on the fourth Sunday down at the World's Fair Park. Look for the International Building around, 10:30 on Sunday. Then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement, or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Knoxville Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it most every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or this radio show, you can come to an ASK meeting or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. You can be our next co-host or guest. And that's about it for announcements. So back to our discussion.
Nice.
Hi.
I'm the Wombat.
Hey, you're the Wombat. And we have Super Curious with us.
Exactly.
Yes, hello.
And Super Curious, by the way, can be found on Google. All you have to do is YouTube, Google YouTube Super Curious. Type those three words into Google, and you'll get me brought to Linda Mako's channel, where she is very Yay. Super curious and has
very
many
cool.
examples of kitchen epistemology.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Check it out.
Cool. So we were talking about why atheists shouldn't call religions mental illnesses. What do we mean when we call it a mental illness, and maybe other words that we could use instead of calling it that? Because I can think it could be problematic. I know an example that's brought up many times is example, and I don't want to, you know, repopularize the story, but there was a mother who drowned her boy and girl in the bathtub because she was under the impression that if they died before a certain age, they would be able to be sent to heaven because their souls were still pure, based on her.
It was actually all of her children. She had five kids.
What?
She did them all that way.
Gee whiz, mind then. So as unfortunate as that is, that's often brought up in these conversations about whether or not religion is a mental illness.
Yeah. Her name was Andrea Yates. Hmm. And a quick Google search will find out all the details on that.
Hmm.
But, she had heard through her church that, children who die before a certain age are considered innocent and will go directly to heaven. Mm. And she worried about their eternal soul, so she took it in her own hands to kill them all before they reached that age. Mm. And she did it one day in a bathtub, drowned them all.
Linda, what do you think?
Oh, it's such a gruesome story. It's quite a sticky subject. And I'm no medical professional, so I think I would be interested to know if she had any kind of condition that could have been diagnosed.
Yeah, well, they do say that she was suffering from a postpartum condition, but the thing about it is, how is it possible to draw a line when somebody is suffering from some kind of mental illness, and the fact that her teachings, her religious teachings, are saying things like that?
Right.
What do you do? How do you just
you admit the best scientific answer at that point, which is I don't know. You know, if it's a line that can't be drawn, or if it's a line that we don't have enough information to make a clear delineation in the sand. I don't know is not only just an option, but is the best answer. And when we go from I don't know to you have a mental illness because you're religious, that is making a claim that necessarily can't be supported and could possibly be more detrimental to people who have mental illnesses and are afraid to express it because now it's associated with a lady that kills their kids or someone that's religious and gets offended by someone who claims that this lady who's doing harm is the same thing that gives them a reason to be nice to their kids. It just cloudies the water more.
What gets me is the current atmosphere in today's politics, going all the way up to the Supreme Court, is that if a person is acting on, quote, sincerely held religious beliefs, then they have every right to do whatever the heck they want to do. And in this case, I mean, we have to draw the line here.
Right.
But how much shy of that line do we want to move that?
Mm. That's a discussion worth having, I think. I mean, and we can only do that when we start calling, how would I put it? If we are willing to start saying, hey, let's have a discussion about mental illness and try to remove some of the connotations behind it so that we can try to get to a better understanding of what it is, how it's caused, and how we can reliably treat it. And still exists as a meaningful society to be in, rather than just trying to pigeonhole it into it's a religious person's problem because they believe in a God they're mental ill. I feel like until we're willing to have an honest discussion about it, where we're willing to say this is what it is and this is what it's not, and we don't know until then, we won't be able to get these really bad conflations out of the public mindset. And I think atheists in particular need to work on yes, we get, there's a lot of frustrating times when religious people are bullying us, and it happens, no doubt. But if we do the same thing too and throw in other groups well into the mix, it's not going to help clear up the situation. In fact, it's going to take even longer. And I think overall we're getting better at communicating with each other. I think Linda's hobby, Larry, your efforts and things that I do all exemplify that it's not only easy to talk to people, but it's getting easier to do so. We have to continue to start asking ourselves hard questions about mental illness and religion and where one ends and the other one begins. And
well, there's a lot of problems in there too, which may not be self-evident, like who's going to make the decision? I mean, are we talking government or are we talking a religious leader? As we have to have an authority or an expert on this particular case, let's say, who is the government to say that her religious beliefs are wrong? I mean, should they even step in and say that the religious beliefs are wrong? Or should they get somebody who's just shy of killing your own kids but holds all the other doctrines to be true? And if we hold that to be true, then what about all the other religions? It's the government really can't step in because they don't want to be in a position of saying this religion is right and this one's wrong.
No, of course not.
But somebody has to step in and save the children in cases like this.
Right.
I think it's a secular government that needs to do so.
I like a separation of church and state. I think that's the way how it should be. And then as far as the well-being of your children, that should be a government question. And then if someone wants to be religious, they can totally be religious. But if it comes to the harm of a child, that's when the government should step in because we value the well-being of people.
That's always where my line has been. People who say that, like Christian Scientists who won't allow their children to get blood transfusions or call doctors if they're sick because it's in God's hands.
Yeah.
The parents are as true believers, but what about the safety and welfare of the children who may not be?
Right.
Or may not even have the wherewithal to make that type of decision yet.
Right, like vaccinations and whether or not they should learn evolution in school, things like that affect other people in society.
Right, it's almost like we need a rule that you can't indoctrinate your children into a religion until the age of 14 or 15 or something, maybe even 18, where they have the cognitive ability to distinguish reality from pseudo-reality.
Rather than doing that, I would rather than like forcing a kid not to have that experience, that religious experience, I would say instead, as a secular government, it's their prerogative to endorse and exercise critical thinking in school as soon as they start school, and that way they can come to their own faculties of what's true and what's not, and have
a lot of times by the end. That is too late.
It wasn't too late for me. I can guarantee you, as soon as you increase your standard, there are always exceptions.
There are exceptions, but when you're when they have them homeschooled, I mean not homeschooled but home indoctrinated for 5 or 6 years before they start school. You know, it may very well be too late.
I just don't think it's the government's role to tell you how to raise the kid as far as when to take him to church, but it could be the government's role to increase critical thinking in as a practice. And that is something I think we lack anyway. And that's the easier compromise that can actually reasonably be reached. What do you think about that? Linda?
Super curious.
Well, I definitely think that I would be more proactive with critical thinking in schools. And I think that's beneficial for kids. And when it comes to the whole, like with the example of the mother drowning her kids, I'm kind of thinking it's the government's, the secular government's, because it's a crime to kill your children. And the fact that she had a religious theme to the reasoning behind her death, I think is kind of irrelevant for what kind of reason she had in her mind. I'm kind of thinking if she was suffering from postpartum depression and could she have still like done this to her kids and had another reason in her mind, like another theme behind it. So, I think the actions, the the law should prohibit and protect, prohibit certain actions and protect its citizens and the well-being of all. And of course, the children's well-being is paramount.
It's a really interesting point in the sense of, if she was an atheist, if this lady was an atheist and she killed her family, and the government said, well, we don't like that, now we're going to make a law that says all kids need to be religious until 15. That would be fixing the fire by adding more fire. So I think that way out of a badly reasoned position is to have reason. And thankfully, there's not like varieties of different kinds of reasons to get. It's you, when you have it, you have it. And the cool thing about it is you can learn it at any time. And what street epistemology does show is that, like, regardless of who you are, just talking with someone for like a quick 5-minute break can be all it takes for someone to be inspired enough to realize that they don't have a good reason. And that isn't something you can shake away as like an insult. You can't just be like, oh, I don't have a good reason, but who cares? I don't like the way how that guy looks. That's fundamentally something that's going to be like a stone in their shoe. They'll keep it with them. And then hopefully they either change their mind right there on the spot, and I've had that happen, or they realize, hey, I need to start asking myself some questions. Let me figure out how this religious thing works. Let me figure out where my Bible came from. Let me figure out what is true, because now I care about that. And it may not necessarily be the same thing that they believed beforehand, but you can't unsee it anymore. It's like seeing that magic trick be done. He's like, I know how this trick works. I know that's not real wine. I know that's just juice. And these crackers aren't really Jesus's body. He's not made out of Ritz crackers. He's not Big Butter Jesus. I know what's going on here. So I would really recommend people learn how to critically think. And the only reason why I say that, too, is because atheists, like what we were talking about in Finland, can be guilty of not critically thinking as well. It's not just something that you're born with. You have to practice it. And that requires talking with people. So if you see, like, Linda and you're in Finland, talk to her. Because she's super curious and she wants to talk to you. But it's something that needs to be practiced. And that's why I think critical thinking is really important. I would love for the day where street epistemology is taught in schools, or at least this methodology of talking to people is a good option. Along with debate clubs and like argument clubs, you could have like an epistemology club where it's just people meaningfully using philosophy to get to the understanding of why someone came to a conclusion and help illuminating errors in logic, if possible.
I certainly agree.
Yeah, and I think the whole options, you said options there, I think thinking critically and using street epistemology also opens our minds up for that we can look and see that there are more options available. It doesn't have to take away the polarized black and white thinking.
Right.
I think it inspires to or facilitates more nuanced thinking, which probably could have helped this lady as well. Although I do think having postpartum depression can make people do horrendous things that maybe street epistemology can't help with either.
Maybe. Yeah.
But to just say that it's religion, I think, is falling a bit short.
One time, I have a very religious friend, and I mentioned to her this particular case, and she said, well, the woman's crazy. I said, yeah, but think about the framework of her mental illness. I mean, somebody to do that has to be crazy, I mean, by definition, to kill your own children. But the framework of her religion was what gave it direction, I guess I should say.
Made it reasonable.
And cause for the death. I mean, if it weren't for the religion itself, she wouldn't have had to kill them. I mean, if she was a mental illness on any other theme, she may have worked it out in some other direction, not even involving the kids. But it was the framework that sent her over. But I guess you could say that about secular frameworks as well.
You know, the weird thing I have, the idea that I'm thinking about it is, here's a lady who is mentally ill and religious as a separate entity. And in her skewed understanding, she believes, rightly so, that her kids are going to go to hell if they mature past a certain age. And it's her duty to kill them so that, reasonably,
at least there was a good chance that they might.
Right.
She didn't think that they would all go to hell if she let them live.
Right.
She felt that they were in jeopardy of it, and most people are.
And
so that's why she took it into her own hands.
And if the religion was true, that is a actually reasonable thing to do. Like, in a sense, as twisted as it sounds, like, that would be the right choice. It's just a question
Not only that, but she... in Christianity, you can be forgiven of anything except for blaspheming of the Holy Spirit. Mm. So once she killed her children and sent them to heaven, she could go to confession and get forgiveness of her own sins, and then they could all be happily there in heaven. It's all supported by that religious framework.
It is, but I think it was caused by a separate mental illness that that was only perpetrated by her low standard of evidence that made her believe in something that was inherently already unreasonable. So, like, I think sure. The mental illness compelled her to do things along the lines of reason that she already had, but I don't think they're one and the same thing. And I love nuance, but I just feel like in the mm-hmm. event where we have, you know, dead kids, a mother that killed them, it's easy to just paint the whole situation black and walk away from it and look for other examples that we can also paint black. But there's distinction there that's subtle and significant. And I think it's interesting that atheists, you know, we're all three atheists here, are taking the time to say, hey, you know, while this wasn't necessarily religion's fault, well, I would say it's not religion's fault, but I would also say, like, it's problematic that a standard of belief can be so low mm-hmm. that it can actually compel people who have mental illness to follow these kinds of paths, and maybe we should help to inspire a separation between, hey, this is what we need to do to help people who looking for better reasons to understand things versus looking for better ways to help people that are mentally ill, because they aren't one and the same thing, and putting them both in the same drawer might help to only further complicate the issues moving forward.
Yeah, I think that takes me back to the thought that I started with in the first part, that I would criticize the dogmas, the beliefs, more than the people acting out on them.
That's
really good. Definitely need to attack the dogmas on every logical ground that we can.
Yeah, that's much better. I like that. And by attacking the dogmas, we mean, like, don't make it personal. Just, like, if someone says, hey, I believe X, talk about X. Don't talk about why they're wrong for believing X.
Like you said, it's perfectly rational if you truly believe that your kids are going to go to hell, that you would want to save them from that. That I think the dogma needs to be hit on, and that gives the framework that Larry was talking about, and the theme that I was also talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to change the themes.
So. Yep. We do have, like, maybe 3 minutes left. I'm going to throw out one weird question. Why isn't it the case that all religious people aren't just killing their kids in the same way right now? Why is it only this outlier that we have as an example? Why isn't this more common?
Well, first of all, they have a taboo against it. They have rules against killing your kids or suicide. One thing that they have to do is put a taboo in there against suicide, or people would just be killing themselves to go to heaven all the time.
But what about killing your kids?
No, it's thou shalt not kill is supposed to take care of that. But if the sin for killing anybody, your children included, is going to hell, but you can get forgiven for it, I think that's a loophole they just overlooked. Or maybe that's one that they used in the Crusades and during the Inquisitions. You know, we'll kill these infidels, but we'll get forgiven for it.
Yeah, it seems that like the loopholes are there if you are looking
for their use.
Yeah, for their use. And that makes it an unreliable, if you ask me, kind of sort of an unreliable wishy-washy book that lets you do whatever you want whenever you want to do it.
Right.
But, hey, we're down to the final minute of the show. Larry, what do you got? Or Linda, what do you got for us as the final outward message?
Well, the thing that I was just thinking that I would also add is that I think just evolution, the way that we are built and wired, would also keep people from killing their kids, even when their beliefs can be quite strong to the contrary.
Cool.
You mean we are, in fact, evolved from filthy monkey men?
Yes. And oxytocin is really powerful and will want to protect kids over a lot of things that might...
Great, Larry. You got 40 seconds. What's our outgoing?
Well, you go ahead, and I always close off with the same way. So go ahead if you've got.
Have a great weekend, guys. Drive safely. That's all I gotta say.
Okay, don't worry about going to hell because everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Don't sweat it. The time to worry about it is when they prove that we have hells, and heavens and souls, and nobody has done that in 2,000 years.
All right.
Anyway, we're here next time, next Wednesday, 7 o'clock. Everybody say bye.
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 Bye, and we're gone. See you.
Thank you for having me.
ZOLP 103.9 FM, Knoxville.